How much more of that can you take? Just staring, not saying anything, just quiet, silent. How long until you elbowed your neighbor and said, what is he doing? How long until some of y'all started tweeting? He lost it. How much longer could we just sit in silence? We hate silence. We're terrified of it. We hate it so much that we fill our lives with constant noise. When you woke up this morning, did you turn on your TV? Or the radio? Not necessarily to watch it, but just so you have something on in the background. When you cranked up your car to come here, did you turn on the radio? When you jog or when you work out, do you have your earbuds in and your playlist dialed up to block out all the people around us who are also blocking you out doing the same thing? We even go to bed with a box fan in the hallway. It's not necessarily for the cool breeze, but I need that noise to fall asleep. Silence creeps us out, man. We are terrified of it. We need the noise. We need the noise. We stay connected through social media, sharing, posting, commenting, following, arguing sometimes all day long. But you never actually spoke to anyone. Communicating to everyone, everywhere, but not really connected. And we do this to project who it is that we want everyone else to see. To say that this is the me that I want you to know. But when you take away the connection, when you take away the noise, and you're just left there in silence, who are you actually left there with? Just yourself. Just your thoughts. That can be scary, can't it? Sometimes it's the stuff that we've pressed down. And we've pressed it down deep. And what happens is when we are quiet, when we are silent, in the silence, that stuff that we've pressed down deep now has an opportunity to speak. And we don't want to hear what it has to say. You see, if we stay connected, if we stay busy, if we stay noisy, then somehow we believe that we are somebody because of that, because we are busy. But getting quiet will assure us that we already are somebody, but not usually the person that I'm projecting for everyone else to see. It's the version of ourselves that we know that we need to work on. We know that this version of myself needs work. But we neglect that because it's uncomfortable. It's the hurt person. It's the angry person. It's the sad person. Maybe the depressed person. The lonely person. The sinner. The person with what we call the storm within. You know, we love the saying, right? Be kind. Because you never know what a person's going through. Why do we not know? We press it down. We keep it close to the chest. And then there'll be moments, small moments, where something so negligible happens, and there's an explosion, and everybody goes, wow, what's that about? Push it down. Push it down and be quiet. It's the brokenhearted secret self that no one really knows except God. Not even your spouse. Sometimes we're so terrified of it that not even our spouse knows that person. No one except God. Oh, he knows. It's just like the seven churches that Jesus addresses in Revelation chapters 2 and 3 where he says, I know your works. I know your deeds. I know your reputation. You look great. You look really busy. A lot of noise going on. But inside, you're all messed up. God knows. And so it is in silence that not only do we hear ourselves, our true selves, our secret selves, it is in silence that we also are able to hear God's word in contrast to that secret self. And it scares us to death, doesn't it? Maybe not all the time. And I'm sure there are exceptions to all the rules, and so I'm not making rules here. But by and large, I stood here quiet, and you didn't know what was going to happen. You had an expectation that I'm going to get up here and start talking. And when I didn't do what was expected, as often life doesn't go as expected, it freaks us out. Silence terrifies us. And so this morning, I want to talk about being still. And the necessity as Christians that we have for silence. There's a necessity. We need silence. We need some time just to be quiet. And don't get me wrong, there's a time to speak. And as Paul said in Ephesians 5, that when we speak, we must speak boldly. It's hard to listen, though, when you're talking. Sometimes we need to listen. I had planned to speak about the oneness and the unity that comes with baptism this morning, but I changed my mind and decided to present this lesson instead. Maybe if I get to come back before Adam starts, I'll present that lesson then. Because I wanted to talk about the spiritual discipline in silence. I think it's needed right now. The spiritual discipline in silence is what we often ignore. The Bible speaks about it a fair amount. And so as I am excited that Adam is coming, I'm probably as excited as y'all are. You have no idea. God's one of my best friends. I'm excited that he's moving here. I'm excited he's going to be close. And as I said last time, I don't know if that should concern you or not. But there's a spiritual discipline in silence. And it often gets ignored. God invites us to listen to him. Does he not? But only the silent hear. And those who are not silent do not. You ever have a conversation with someone and you're really pouring it out? And you can see it in their face. You can see it when you try to look them in the eyes. They're not listening to you. They're just waiting for you to stop talking. So they can say what they need to say because what they've got to say is more important than what you've got to say. We do that. And sometimes we do it with God. He invites us to listen. You can't listen when you're talking. And that is why the psalmist writes to us, be still and know that I'm God. We love that scripture. It makes a great Pinterest graphic. But the truth is in that, be still and know, capital K-N-O-W. You want to get to know him? Be still. Stop moving. Stop talking. Stop doing and just get quiet for a minute. How often do you tell your children, especially when you're telling them something important, stop what you're doing and look at me? Because if you don't, they're just doing whatever, and you know they didn't hear a word that you said. Everything you just said went, I thought I told you to. I didn't, I'm not. Look at me. Be still. Look at me. We want their undivided attention, and God does too. Our undivided attention. In 1 Kings chapter 19, we see that during a very difficult time in Israel's history, God sought out Elijah. And Elijah was a discouraged prophet, to say the least. And we could spend weeks studying Elijah. But he wanted to teach him something. And he wanted to teach him something new. And so this is what he said. Chapter 19, starting in verse 11, it says, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting the mountains and breaking rocks into pieces before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. After the fire, the sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle, and he went out and he stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Scholars have struggled for years on how to explain that God spoke in the sound of sheer silence. So they translated the Hebrew phrase as a still small voice or a gentle whisper, depending on your translation. But the original text states that there was only silence. And Elijah met God in that silence. And I will suggest to you, brethren, that we will too. That's where we meet him too. Scripture teaches us that God is not only in the wind, not only in the earthquake, not only in the fire, but he is also in the sound of silence. You see, silence is actually a mode of activity. It's not simply refraining from speaking or undue noise. It is a mode of activity. It is a special and focused form of attentiveness. And in this context, it is a special and focused form of attentiveness to God, where we tune in. And so here are the things that I want us to take away today from this. Is that silence centers us. It grounds us. Silence brings us back to the basics of ourselves and our senses. When you come home from work, and you've sat in traffic, especially now, with 2059 messed up downtown. Even my very simple routes that I usually make are all messed up now. And sometimes I'm sitting. And when I left Atlanta, I thought I was leaving all that. I didn't think it was going to follow me here. I've wasted more of my life in the car than I care to talk about. You sit in traffic. And of course, when you're in traffic, everyone around you is an idiot. No one knows how to drive but us, right? They're just as frustrated as you are. They're just trying to get home like you are. And you come home and you're just, and you walk in, and the kids come running at you, and your spouse comes running at you, and you're like, I need a minute. A minute of what exactly? I need a minute of silence. I need some silence. I need a minute of silence to myself to regroup, to get my head right so that I don't take my frustrations out on my family. Back when people used to use maps, y'all remember those? We'd take a road trip, the big fold-out paper map that would like literally cover the whole dash of the car. I can still remember my dad getting the map out. He pulled the car over. He turned around and tell us all, "Everybody be quiet. I'm trying to read the map." "You read with your ears, Dad?" But it's about the senses, isn't it? I need to focus. We're lost and I'm trying to find our way out of here. I need you to be quiet so I can focus. Before we took the Lord's Supper, in 1 Corinthians 11 and 28, a passage I know that we know well, we are commanded to examine ourselves so that we don't eat and drink judgment upon ourselves. And that's a bit out of context, I know, but the point is that we take a moment to focus. In Psalm 4, verses 4 and 5, David says this, "Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord." Notice that the qualifier for making right sacrifices is not being angry and sinning, but by trusting in the Lord. But what's the mechanism that he lists there? Be silent. Make right sacrifices by not being angry and not sinning and by trusting the Lord. The mechanism that we do that is silence. I need a minute. I need a minute to recenter myself. Being silent, pondering your own heart, comparing and contrasting God and his precepts, and then making corrections mentally. Before we offer anything to him amiss, we recenter ourselves. Silence centers us. And I think that's important. The second thing that it does is it strengthens us. There are multiple passages throughout the Bible, and in particular the Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, that admonish us strongly to be silent. Be silent rather than wordy. Proverbs 10:8, "The wise of heart will receive commandments, but a babbling fool will come to ruin." The wise will receive. How do you receive? Stop talking. You can't listen if you're talking. You can't receive if you're talking. As a matter of fact, a babbling fool will come to ruin, it goes on to say in that passage. Proverbs 17:28, "Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he's deemed intelligent." Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 1 through 3, Solomon writes this. He says, "Guard your steps when you go to the house of the God. Draw near to listen. It's better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know they are doing evil. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes with much business, and a fool's voice with many words." You know what the word business is? Busyness. I had to learn how to read phonetically because I'm dyslexic. And I used to think that was hilarious. When I had to sound it out, busyness. Business. Busyness. "Therefore, let your words be few. The dream comes with much busyness, and a fool's voice with many words." These verses, among others, are considered to be from the books of wisdom. But it is not only wisdom that we learn when we practice these, but we also learn self-control. Isn't that essentially what he's telling us here? Guard your steps before you go to the house of God. Control yourself. Control your mouth. Control your actions. Control yourself. Being silent when we don't want to be silent shows our willingness to wait upon the Lord. Your way, not my way. Your words, not my words. Your righteousness, not my righteousness. To be submissive to His will and not to ours. That's the rub, isn't it? That's the struggle. To be submissive to His will. To do what He says, not what I say. That He's promised us. He's promised us that He will be our strength when we're weak. Exodus 14:14. The Lord will fight for you, and you only have to be silent. Silence attests to our resolve to endure difficulties. To endure difficulties as well as self-reflection amidst times of anger. Isn't that what we do? We always talk about count to 10. Before you act out in anger, count to 10. What are you doing? Are you simply just counting numbers? Or are you reflecting upon the bigger picture? Are you playing this thing out? That amidst times of anger, I'm going to reflect on myself for a minute, get refocused, and that if I have to endure difficulty, God is my strength. You don't have to participate in every fight you're invited to. We love that, though, don't we? Somebody said something on Facebook. I must respond. You don't have to respond. As a matter of fact, your silence may say more than anything you could quip off your fingertips. When Jesus stood before this raging crowd of Jews that wanted His blood, they wanted Him dead, and they're shouting all their accusations at Him. Pilate says, aren't you going to defend yourself? Aren't you going to say something? Jesus answered him not. And it said, Pilate marveled at His silence. Silence screams confidence. Assurance and strength. You don't have to answer. Isaiah 40:31 says, but they who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles, and they shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. The idea that I can wait on the Lord, that I can trust Him, that I don't have to answer this, I'll just be quiet. That maybe my life should say something more than my mouth does. That I can walk tall truly by speaking softly. Silence strengthens us. It makes us strong. And it reflects who gives us our strength. And finally, silence fills us. Again, when I first stood up here and I said nothing, I wish I could have taken a picture and shown you your faces. The expressions at first, when I got up here with no concern, you probably thought I was just collecting my thoughts. Within a few seconds, there was concern. By the 30-second mark, there was a mix of curiosity, but mostly worry. Because there was nothing filling the silence. There was an expectation that there would be something to fill the silence, and there was nothing. And again, how many times has life not gone as expected? And when that happens, it leaves you scrambling in the wake of. I've heard it said that nature abhors a vacuum. That when something is missing in someone's life, the vacuum created by the absence of that thing gets filled with something else. This is how boys with an absentee father or an abusive father could grow into an atheist or an addict. You see, because we base our models in life and our belief systems in life off of our experiences. And when you do a little statistic study and find out that predominantly 80% of atheists are men, to find out that they had absentee fathers or abusive fathers is not a surprise. The logic says, my earthly dad couldn't get it right. How could there possibly be an all-loving father in heaven? Richard Dawkins, in the forefront of atheism and that whole movement, his father was a Pentecostal minister. His father was also abusive and absentee. It's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence. So this is how boys can grow up to be atheists or grow up to be an addict, looking to fill that hole with something. Seeking validation and acceptance or a sense of self-importance that they didn't get at home. Or sometimes this is how daughters grow up with absentee fathers or abusive fathers, and they grow up to be a stripper or a prostitute. Or worse. They're seeking the illusion of control from male attention that they didn't get at home. And so what they were missing is now filled by something else. The point is that life will fill the space that is created when something is missing. And in the same way, many of us abhor silence. And we struggle with it. Because we realize something is missing. Not only does nature abhor a vacuum, but so does your soul. If we don't fill ourselves with God, something else is going to fill your soul. Write it down. If you don't fill yourself with God, something else will fill you. When God calls us to be still, he's not asking us to do nothing. He's not asking us to not focus on something or to focus on nothing. You remember what God says we need to focus on? He said, be still and know that I am God. We focus on him. We focus on him. We can know God. That's the point of that passage. Be still. I'm knowable. And we can know God because he has made his power visible to us in all his creation. We see that in Romans chapter 1, verse 20. And we can know God because we have the capacity to know love and to show love, to share love, as it was said at the collection. Because God is love in 1 John 4, 7. And we can know God because he gave us his word. In Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, one of my favorite passages of all time, it says, long ago, at many times and many ways, God spoke to us through our fathers by the prophets, but in these last days, he's spoken to us by his Son, whom appointed the heir of all things, through whom also he created the world. He is the radiance of the glory of God, the exact imprint of his nature. He upholds the universe by his word. the word of his power. After making purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of majesty on high. We can know him because of his word. His word is powerful. Did you see what it does there? It upholds the universe. It all exists because he says so. He says so. I can know him because I'm alive right now. The universe is upheld because he said. And I can know that. And we can know God because we can pray to him, and more than that, we can know that he hears us. Psalm 34, verse 17 through 19, he says, when the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of some of their troubles. Actually, that's not what it says. It says he delivers them out of all of their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted. He saves the crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers them out of them all. My friends, what does all leave out? Nothing. And we can know. I can know that. And when I am still, I can hear all of these words. If I will just be quiet. If I will just be silent, I can hear this and I can know this and I can be filled with this. There doesn't have to be a vacuum. I can be whole. I can be completed. I can be perfect, not in the sense that I'm flawless, but that I am completed by his love. Psalm 29, verses 7 through 11. David writes this. He says, the voice of the Lord strikes with flashes of lightning. The voice of the Lord shakes the desert. The Lord shakes the desert of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord twists the oaks and strips the forest bare. The Lord sits enthroned over the flood. The Lord is enthroned as king forever. The Lord gives strength to his people, and the Lord blesses his people with peace. That's what's missing. So often, that's what's missing. It's peace. Not peace with people, but peace with the Lord. Because of what I pushed down and I haven't dealt with, keeps me up at night. And when I get quiet, all that stuff comes back. And until we deal with that, we'll never be able to sit in silence and know God. Until we deal with that, we'll never be able to be still and know him. We'll be wrestling within ourselves with these things. You can't just push stuff down. You have to get rid of it. So yes, create that vacuum and then let God fill it. The silence centers us and it strengthens us and ultimately it fills us. God speaks to us through our silence. Not that he talks to us directly, but through his word. He's given us his mind that we can fill ours with. Habakkuk 2:20. And though this may be a little out of context, the bottom line is it says what it says, that the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. And in the context of Habakkuk's letter, God is telling him, quit worrying. Quit trying to do my job. Be quiet and listen to me. Be quiet and trust me. But that's the hardest part. That is the hardest part of all of this, is trusting him. Because that's what silence requires. You were forced to trust me for that 30 seconds that I was quiet up here.
That's the part we struggle with.
No doubt, God gives us children to help us understand what it's like in some small way to be like Him. That we can love something so much before it's ever even born. But from the moment we have that knowledge, there's love. And it's unexplainable. I won't even try. And as they grow, and you show them love, they begin to reciprocate and show you love back. And that is the perfection of the completion of the cycle of love. And there are little moments that happen along the way that remind us sometimes of the things that we need to work on. And nothing will do that like a child coming to sit in your lap. Because they come and they show this great trust. Because there's safety there. My daughter, I'll get messed up. She's getting married this year. Sorry. My daughter used to call it the daddy chair. I want to come sit in the daddy chair. And sometimes when children sit in your lap, they just can't be still. They fidget. They're moving. And your first inclination is to hold them there and make them be still. But you know in that moment if you do that, it's going to ruin that trust. And so you put your arms around and you're like, baby, be still. Calm down. You're safe with me. The storm is not going to get you. You're safe with me. And so sometimes with us, we forget what that's like. That sometimes God stills the storm for His child. But other times He stills the storm in His child. We just need to be still. We just need to be quiet. And we just need to trust Him. The question is, this morning, what child will you be? Will you be still and know? Or will you let the noise of life keep you distracted and keep you comfortable, content with the illusion of control? Friends, God hadn't gone anywhere. He's here. He's here. And He waits for us to come and to crawl up into His lap and be still, to trust Him, to know Him. This morning, if you want to know God and you don't, you can. He's made it all available, and I would love to talk to you if you want to know more. And if you're here and you've forgotten to be quiet, you've let the distractions in life and the noise of life become your comfort. God hasn't changed His mind about this. He says, still, be still, and know I'm God. Whatever your need is this morning, I pray you let it be known now as we stand to sing a song to encourage you.